Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
The whole scale of it is just, it's mesmerising. All of those bodies and all of the families.
World of Secrets, Season 3, The Apartheid Killer. Listen now, wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I think the best compliment I've ever had is that there's a boxer by the name of Joe Egan. Big guy, he used to train, spar with Mike Tyson. Came to my exhibition, looked through the microscope, kept looking through, and then tears were running down his eyes. And he said, I've never been knocked out until I've seen your work.
Can you imagine creating artwork so small it can fit within the eye of a needle or within a full stop at the end of a sentence? Today you're going to hear from an artist who defies the limits of human perception and challenges our understanding of scale.
Hi, my name is Dr. Willard Wigan, MBE. I create the smallest sculptures in the world. I'm not Michelangelo. They call me Microangelo.
Welcome to the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service, the series that takes you inside the creative process of some of the world's leading artists. I'm Dul Taher, and I'm following Willard Wigan as he works on his latest sculpture, a tribute to one of history's most influential figures, Charles Darwin.
I've always had a fascination with Darwin, his theory of evolution, and, you know, he's certain has a lasting effect on me.
In the realm of microscopic art, where precision is key, Willard employs extraordinary techniques to achieve his creations. But it's his unique use of his own heartbeat that truly sets him apart.
So what I'll normally do is breathe in until it's just completely still. I can feel the pulse in my finger. I can feel my heart pumping, and I can just work between the beat and that allow my pulse to jump and cut away at the material.
His heartbeat becomes a natural jackhammer, guiding his hand with precision as he sculpts the tiniest details.
Your movement is critical when it comes to working on this molecular level, because every single movement is a problem. You're only a few seconds away from disaster. The amount of work, dedication and punishment that you put your body through to do it. It's not enjoyable, but when you finish it, you get the pleasure.
The result is sculptures so small, they defy the limits of human perception. Willard's achievements are impressive. His work sells for six-figure sums and is exhibited globally. He received an honorary doctorate from Warwick University, holds a Guinness World Record for the world's smallest handmade sculptures, and was awarded an MBE for services to art from Buckingham Palace. However, his path to success was anything but easy. As a schoolboy with unrecognized autism, he struggled with reading and writing, faced regular humiliation from teachers, and endured routine bullying and racism.
I left school without being able to read or write. Still can't read or write very well today. I couldn't tell the time till I was 18. Wasn't a good experience. No, it wasn't. It was enough to destroy your soul if you let it. And I felt as small as one of my sculptures.
These experiences led to feelings of isolation and underachievement. Encouraged by his mother, who always nurtured his unique abilities, Willard was inspired to pursue his artistic dreams. This ultimately fueled his determination to prove his talent. It's this same determination which continues to drive Willard to make new work, and I'm going to watch him as he starts his latest sculpture. It's a beautiful, sunny Sunday morning in May, with spring in full bloom. I'm about 10 miles south of Birmingham in the small village of Coughton Hackett. As you can hear, the birds are out in force, and there's a gentle, warm breeze moving through the trees. I'm on my way to meet Willard, and I'm really looking forward to witnessing his creative process and his work up close.
Ah, Delta.
Hey, Willard, how are you?
Great to see you.
Good to see you.
Come into my world.
There we are.
After a quick chat and a cup of tea, Willard offers me a tour of his studio and a chance to experience some of his work.
It's lovely and quiet.
Yeah, nice and quiet. I chose it because of that.
So this is where the magic happens.
This is where I put spells on people with my work, you know, right here. And there's the two microscopes.
So what are these normally used for?
Bacteria and stuff like that. Forensics.
It looks like a kind of like a modern day Frankenstein's lab.
It really does. You could call it that, yeah.
Can you tell me about the new piece that you're starting today?
For this particular piece of work, I want to create a sculpture of Darwin. I've always had a fascination with Darwin, what he achieved, his theory of evolution, and what he programmed into our heads. You know, he certainly has a lasting effect on me, and he's got the most interesting face ever.
Willard is famous for putting his work on the head of a pin or within the eye of a needle, but he is taking a different approach with his latest piece. Darwin used a pencil to sketch his ideas that were crucial for developing his theory of evolution and natural selection.
So, why not create a sculpture of Darwin on the point of the pencil to represent what he used to draw, what he used to see? So he's manifesting through the point of the pencil. And then me, I was allergic to pen and paper anyway, because I can't write, so I might as well do something with it. Might as well use it, because, I mean, if you ask me to write something, it's not going to work.
Next to Willard is an impressive display of sharp, precise cutting tools. Scissors, blades, knives, scalpels, saws. It resembles equipment that a dentist, a surgeon, or even a pathologist might use.
You make your own tools, because you can't buy anything.
No, there isn't a microscopic art shop.
No.
Willard crafts and sharpens his own tools to create his intricate microsculptures. He employs a process of careful grinding and polishing. Using shards of diamond and tiny fragments of needles, he painstakingly shapes and hones these tools to a microscopic scale.
Your dexterity has to be trained, and the right application of pressure has to be put on, so that's when you have to hold your breath and work between your heartbeat. So this is my world. I sit here for hours, as you can see. Look at the chair.
But your seat, it looks like
it's padded.
It looks like a gamer's chair.
Yeah. If you don't have that, you're going to get cramp.
How long can you be in that chair for?
16 hours a day.
16 hours?
Yeah, I've fallen asleep and looking through the microscope, you know, and then your eyes are pressing against the lens on the microscope. You have two round circles on your eyes because you've been concentrating for so long. I've just got to saw this off.
You had a pencil, and now you've got kind of one quarter of it left.
Mm-hmm. There's the pencil, and I'm saying to myself, Darwin is going to be on the end of that pencil. So then I start to carve away. See, I'm carving away now, and I'm got the vision of him in my head.
Rather than referencing a photograph or a picture, Willard visualises the image in his head from memory and works from that. This visualisation is central to his craft.
So the very first steps of this new piece of work are underway, and you're using one of these incredibly sharp instruments just to nibble away at the tip of the pencil.
Just got to keep that image in your mind.
And that scraping sound you can hear is...
Yeah, it's cutting.
Shavings off the top.
When you're working underneath the microscope on a molecular level, you're getting all these little external forces. Things start jumping like tiddlywinks, static electricity and all types of stuff.
What's the weirdest thing that's ever happened during the creative process?
I inhaled one of my sculptures. Yeah, I inhaled one. I was working on Alice in Wonderland, believe it or not, and I had the table... There, I had the Mad Hatter, I had the mouse in the teapot, I had the rabbit, all that round the table having that little tea party. And Alice was the last one. So while I was lifting her, after I'd made her,
I used one of my eyelashes to lift her with. And she was on the end of my eyelash like that. And I was looking through the microscope like that to put her into position. So you've got to watch out that the eyelash doesn't flicker away like a catapult. So these things can happen. So as I was doing it, I was looking this way. And my mobile phone went off and I went, as if to say, who's that? I went, who's that? And I inhaled Alice.
So straight down your throat?
Yeah, down my cavity somewhere.
In order to delve further into his creative process, Willard shows me some of his smallest work. He disappears from the room for a minute and then returns with a bag no bigger than a lunchbox.
The reason why I'm showing you these is because I want you to experience me and what I go through.
In it are about 15 small Perspex boxes. Each box contains a needle or the head of a pin, and to the naked eye, they appear to hold nothing special, or even nothing at all.
Now look at the eye, the needle, see? I'll let you hold it, but as long as your finger doesn't go inside the box.
Okay. So I'm looking, I'm holding it now, it's like the size of a matchbox. The needle is placed in the middle.
Can you see anything at all?
Do you know what? I've got really good vision, according to an optometrist. I cannot see what is in
there. Okay, right. I'm going to put this under here now.
Once placed under the microscope, a whole new world emerges.
Oh, wow. That is bonkers.
You can see the coronation crown with all the diamonds.
That just defies belief.
Viewed under a microscope, the crown's intricate 24-carat gold frame shimmers. Each detail, from the delicate arches to the minuscule cross at the top, is crafted in astonishing precision.
I think my mind is officially blown.
When the Queen saw it, she was looking around the back. Because I made a little crown for her. Then she looked through the microscope again and realised it was really there.
What was her reaction? What did she say?
Goodness me. It's beyond one's comprehension. She was amazed. I mean, when you see this one, it's going to blow your mind. A lot of people need oxygen when they see this one. Look. Shakespeare's inside there.
Oh! That is wild. That is absolutely wild.
Easy.
The sculpture of Shakespeare, crafted within a human hair, is baffling. Through a microscope, Shakespeare's likeness emerges with astonishing clarity. Every tiny contour, from the expressive face to the intricate attire, is meticulously carved.
How? It's baffling. Is that the smallest?
No, it's smaller than that.
Oh, man.
I did a baby inside.
I think I need to lie down. I think I need to lie down. This is too much.
Back to his current sculpture, Willard invites me to look at the progress made over the last few hours.
See, now, what I can do, I can get you to have a look and you see it starting to take shape.
Okay.
See all the little shavings. If you have a look here. If you look down the microscope there, can you see where his head's starting to come out at the top?
I can see a little indentation, but I think at this point it's my imagination projecting.
Oh, yeah. Let your imagination do that, because it'll happen.
Hi, I'm Simon Jack.
And I'm Zing Sing.
And Good Bad Billionaire is back for a new season, now from the BBC World Service.
Every episode, we pick a billionaire and we find out how they made their money.
And then we judge them. Are they good, bad, or just another billionaire?
So, who are some of the people that you'll hear about in season two?
The richest comedian ever? Jerry Seinfeld's there.
There's also my personal favourite story, the fashion designer who was once a communist mime. That's Miuccia Prada.
And the people behind some of the biggest companies on the planet. Google, TikTok, for example.
But we are kicking off with a sporting superstar, Tiger Woods.
Good Bad Billionaire, from the BBC World Service. Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Thank you. You're listening to the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service. I'm tracking the development of microsculptor Willard Wiggins' latest creation, a portrait of Charles Darwin. It's time for me to leave Willard now, but over the next few weeks, he sends me regular voice notes and new images as the work progresses.
I'm having some problems here, Delta, with this because every single detail is critical. The nose has got to be the right shape. The eyes have to be squinting. As soon as you start carving away, the eyes would cave in, the eyebrows would fall off, the nose would crumble. One slight movement of your pulse, then it's all over. It's not going to look like Darwin. It's going to look like Father Christmas gone wrong. 4 times I've had to change the pencil. I was about to give up. I thought, what do I need to do? Yeah, I've got the solution. I dip the pencil into super glue. And as I carved away, it kept it together and it wasn't falling off. But I wanted to choose that cream graphite because it gives it that marble effect.
It's looking fantastic.
I'm going to continue and I'm going to photograph this and let you see.
Willard's new sculpture of Charles Darwin is truly beginning to take shape. As the face and head emerge from the top of the pencil, the likeness to the renowned naturalist becomes strikingly apparent. I can see the painstaking detail with which Willard has captured Darwin's distinctive features, the furrowed brow, the thoughtful expression, and the intricate curls of his beard are all meticulously rendered. The choice of cream graphite makes it look like a marble bust and gives the sculpture an almost ghostly appearance.
He's got this face that's full of character, and I've got to capture that character.
A few days later, I call Willard to check on his progress. His voice, thoughtful and pensive, fills the line. He speaks about the pencil's significance, a poignant symbol of his childhood struggles with learning difficulties.
When I first picked up a pencil and I started trying to write, and it was just the most embarrassing moment of my whole life. I'll never forget that. Darwin's going to help me out. There's a lot of my heart and my soul, my spirit, just focus, resilience, everything to do it.
Willard works up to 16 hours a day and on several different sculptures at a time. He frequently works through the night to minimise disruption and avoid air disturbances. He's planning a mammoth sculpting session to give the piece one final push.
What time is it now?
It's 11 o'clock.
Till tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock in the morning. I'll still be here. Time is irrelevant to me because I don't know where time goes when I'm working.
The following morning, I get a final voice note from a clearly drained Willard.
This is without doubt the most significant piece that I've made ever, in a different way because of the message behind it.
Listening to Willard's voice message, I couldn't help but notice how exhausted he sounded. His voice, usually so vibrant and full of energy and humour, now carried a weary undertone.
I'm very tired. I've been working lots of hours, so I've finished it.
With an exhausted Willard happy with the work, I hop on a train to Birmingham to observe one of the final and most crucial steps of the process, photographing the artwork with award-winning photographer and collaborator Paul Ward.
We are now approaching Birmingham New Street, our final station.
Back in the studio, I ask Paul about his initial impressions of seeing Willard's work for the first time.
When you see photos of it, you don't realise how small it actually is. And that's why I think it's always good to actually go to an exhibition and see his work, because then you can see it outside of the microscope and you can actually get the context of the size of it.
And I think that was the key for me. That's what I felt, is that the photographs, as great as they are, as brilliant
they
as
they are...
They
look big.
It's sort of, they blow up everything to the same to the same perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's only, as you say, when you pick up that in the eye of a needle and you can't actually see anything.
Yeah.
and then you look through the microscope, yeah. It does have that wow factor.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
How do you go about photographing something so small?
With Willard's stuff, especially the really tiny stuff, we have to use a microscope, and we need a camera adapter to go onto the microscope. What it does is it separates the lens from the camera body, which allows you to get closer. Normal lenses just won't work that close up. You can get something called macro lenses, which I have got one with me, that you can photograph quite small stuff with.
This sculpture is bigger than most of Willard's work, but still too small to appreciate with the naked eye. Photographing it is crucial to showcase its extraordinary detail and craftsmanship. The choice of background colour is key. The right colour can enhance contrast and make fine textures and details of the microsculpture more visible. For this project, Paul has opted for an unconventional but apt choice of backdrop.
Rather than just use a green piece of paper, it would be interesting to use a leaf. It's very appropriate to Charles Darwin because of all the whole work he did on species and evolution.
Perfect. Obviously, Darwin was always out in the wilderness, weren't he? That fits exactly with what this piece is about.
So we need a leaf?
We need to go out. We need to go on a little leaf hunt and find a couple of examples.
So, in pursuit of the perfect shade of green, we embark on a leaf hunt in Willard's garden.
Looks like the Galapagos found me, doesn't it? Pity the sun wasn't out.
So, I mean, immediately I can see there's some little, I don't know if there's sycamore leaves here, one of those might work. It might be interesting if there's some with really nice veins on the background. I think in the main microscope shot, the leaf will just blur into a green, you won't see the veins. Some catmint here. If you put that anywhere near a cat, they go crazy for it. It's like a drug for them. They literally salivate and go mad.
I mean, as a child, I was spend a lot of time out in the fields looking at leaves and picking up stones, looking at all the insects moving around and watching them carry on their little everyday life, you know. And it was a fascination for me. I was a little Darwin in my own way. You know what I mean? That's where my world is. It's always in that world that you can't see, where people don't choose to look at.
I get the impression we could be here all day looking at backdrops.
Yeah, I think we've got enough, yeah.
Back in the studio, the idea is really beginning to come together now. With a few delicate adjustments, Willard places different leaves behind the sculpture.
OK, do you want to put that under there? And when you see the leaves, the veins in the leaves...
Yeah. Should we set up the camera on that and see?
Yeah, yeah.
Then Paul carefully mounts his camera on top of the microscope, projecting the magnified image onto a monitor. The results are immediate, stunning Willard and Paul as their microscopic world springs to life on the screen.
Fantastic. Paul, what an idea. It's even got me all excited about things.
The green leaf found on the ground earlier propels the miniature sculpture of Darwin forward, providing vibrant contrast and illuminating the intricate details of Willard's work. Its stunning features leave us all seriously impressed.
That's so much more accurate than I thought it was looking at it with your eye.
That's just...
Little collaboration with nature, huh?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I think that works really well. Perfect. So.
With Paul and Willard happy with the composition, Paul begins to photograph it.
Now, the issue you get with any microphotography is the narrow depth of field, which basically means what's in focus when you focus on an object. Well, what we have to do with Willard's stuff is we have to take several shots at different focal points and then stitch those together. It's called focus stacking. We have to sort of stitch it together to get one final image.
It's very, very complicated. I've watched him do it. Nearly as complicated as making one of my sculptures.
No.
With the click and snapping sounds of the camera and the images projecting on the monitor, I can sense Willard's excitement increasing. This feels like the moment where all the hard work pays off, when everything comes together and the new sculpture truly comes to life.
You know that shadow one that you took with the eyes looked like they're really deep set and
mystical. Well, that was here, wasn't it, that one?
Yeah, that looked really mystical. Now, that looks good, I'm happy with that.
Paul and Willard are deep in the creative process, exchanging ideas and making small, or should I say, micro adjustments.
That leaf needs to drop down, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think if you drop the leaf down...
So you can see the point of the leaf.
Yeah.
Right, so...
Okay, I'll move that.
I have to get back under there.
The pair of them have been at this for hours.
You know where the leaf goes into a point?
But I want to...
This is what happens, you see. Because it's a clash of creativity. He'll photograph it, and then he'll think it's right, and he'll have a look again and say, no, that wasn't right. He's going to re-photograph it. He needs to turn it just a little bit more fraction, a few millimetres, and those few millimetres make a big difference to the actual photograph.
It's that kind of pursuit of perfection,
yeah,
really.
It's perfection, because Paul's a perfectionist, and that's how it is.
That's why you work very well together,
though. Yeah.
Sometimes argue, though.
Yeah, we do argue.
Quite a lot.
Say, that's not right. No, well, you do that, Paul. That, yeah. You should have photographed it that angle. Now I know what I'm doing. You know, creative argument. That's going to turn out special.
You have a big smile on your face.
Oh, very happy with it, yeah. Very happy with it.
Willard's latest sculpture, a tribute to Charles Darwin, is crafted on the end of a pencil, a canvas rich in symbolism. For Willard, it holds personal significance. Despite struggling to read or write, his new sculpture represents his triumph over adversity. I catch up with Willard one last time and find him in a reflective mood.
Having a learning difference, having autism, basically I couldn't express myself anymore after being told that I'm the consequence of failure, that I'm illiterate. I struggle. Because of what was programmed into my head, still traumatised by what was said.
If I never had autism, I wouldn't be who I am today. Because autism made me defend myself through my creativity.
What strikes me is that you had a very humiliating experience at school. But the thing that came through the strongest to me was the love of and the encouragement of your mother. What was your mother's key message to you?
Well, my mother's message were, because you can't read or write well, you better find something else that's going to make up for everything that's missing. And when you make your sculpture smaller, your name is going to get bigger. And she'd say, go on a journey to show the world what you're capable of doing. So it would have been a lot easier to do something bigger, but this is... small but very big indeed. I'd like to feed that to the world. And that's my message.
You've been listening to the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service. It was presented and produced by me, Dulta Herr.
Hi, I'm Simon Jack.
And I'm Zing Sing.
And Good Bad Billionaire is back for a new season, now from the BBC World Service.
Every episode, we pick a billionaire and we find out how they made their money.
And then we judge them. Are they good, bad, or just another billionaire?
So, who are some of the people that you'll hear about in season two?
The richest comedian ever? Jerry Seinfeld's there.
There's also my personal favourite story, the fashion designer who was once a communist mime. That's Miuccia Prada.
And the people behind some of the biggest companies on the planet. Google, TikTok, for example.
But we are kicking off with a sporting superstar, Tiger Woods.
Good Bad Billionaire from the BBC World Service. Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.